Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression. And I want to thank my sponsors, who, without who this show wouldn't even happen. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau. Their services are available in the United States and Canada, and it is the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-powered law firms in your area. It gives you access to an attorney at a reasonable price, about a dollar a day. We'll get you in the door. And now you have representation. Now you have somebody that can review contracts for you, that can, you know, if your work wants you to sign some sort of weird new employment contract that has a medical component to it that you're unsure of, send it to your attorneys. If you've got speeding tickets, red light traffic tickets, if you've got any sort of IRS W-2 audit that you need them to take a look at, you've got representation now. And not just some dummy out of law school, somebody with on average 22 years of experience. These are really great law firms in your area. They'll get you protected in a way that that wealthy people have been doing it for a long, long time. That's why we chose the web domain don'tgetpushedaround.com. We don't like the idea of you getting pushed around by people that have more resources than you. Now you have access to the same attorneys that they use for a whole lot less than they spend, I would say. Got to get your legal documents in order, your last will and testament, your medical power of attorney, your financial power of attorney, all that stuff. Get it done. Knock it out in the first month, put it in your safe, you're done with it, you don't have to think about it, now you're protected. Now when you die, the state doesn't get involved in your affairs and start, you know, costing you more in legal fees, costing your family more in legal fees. So be proactive on this stuff. I think you can, if you have a small business, you don't have your own legal department, you can get the small business plan, that'll work for you. If you carry a gun, there's legal paperwork for that. If you just need ID shields, like credit monitoring, reputation management, password manager, all that stuff, they've got all kinds of services that are available. So go to the website, take a look, see what you think. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. Also, since we're talking about shields, we've got EMP shield. Hope you don't need it. But I'll tell you what it protects against: EMPs. It protects against solar flares, which, you know, that's just kind of like a random spin of the roulette wheel, and hopefully you don't get it. And also, it protects against lightning, which I think is obviously very reasonable. It works on your home, on your cars, on your boat, on your generator. You can get bundle packages, makes it more affordable. These are many times more efficient than a single-use military design. In fact, the military asked about taking a look at this product because it was better than the ones that they had. It can handle 40 EMP strikes. Your nerves might not be able to handle 40 EMP strikes, but this product will. It's fitted to the household circuit breaker with just four wires. It installs like a type 2 surge protector. And if you want to do it yourself, there's installation videos on their website, empshield.com. Or you can go on YouTube or wherever and find a bunch of other ones too. So it's easy to get done. You can hire an electrician too if you feel more comfortable doing that. EMPShield.com. Promo code is macro. Get on there. Go take a look. See what you think. I mean, look, hope you don't need it, but prices started around $389. It'll save your house. Save the wiring of your house for sure. You can save your car. You won't have to drive like a 19. It won't look like Cuba. You know how those old cars that they have were, because they can't get any parts. Like, those old cars hold up really well in EMPs. The only people driving will be you and everybody in Cuba. So good luck to them too. Well, this is a topic that is has been on my mind for a while. It's a serious one. It's there's humor in it. You know, the trans community is humorous in a sense, that their ideas and a lot of their indoctrination is wild to watch. You know, the things that they focus on, you know, I'm going to do a TikTok and explain to you how to refer to me with when using cake gender pronouns. And it's like cake self, but, you know, you're just like, oh my God, these people are out of their fucking minds, right? And it's funny because it's just funny. But it's also, when you kind of dig into it a little bit, it's kind of sad too. I mean, a lot of these people are young kids that are very easily impressionable. They're getting interested in a topic that is kind of like a cul-de-sac, man. I mean, there's no there, as, you know, Bill Clinton used to say. If the only thing going for you, if the only thing you can think about talking about on a TikTok video to share with the world is your pronouns, then I mean, not to be a dick, but you've kind of got nothing else then. That's sort of a boring topic. Like, who cares? And I got misgendered today. It's like, well, maybe stop dressing like a girl when you're a grown ass man, and then maybe people won't misgender you because you have a fucking beard. You know what I mean? So there's humor, a ton of humor in it, right? On the surface level, for sure. I could go, you know, I could just watch compilation videos of these people talking about their pronouns and just laugh uncontrollably. But you have to kind of ask why this is even a thing. You know, why are you guys even talking about this? Like, who started this? This is the dumbest trend ever, right? And again, you know, like, as somebody in my line of work, which is now kind of blurring, it's, you know, I've always been in real estate and run a real estate brokerage in Las Vegas. By the way, if you need looking to buy or sell a house in Las Vegas, reach out to me. I can make that happen for you. But, you know, you deal with a lot of people. You deal with buyers, sellers, other real estate agents, people that want to come work for your real estate brokerage. You know, you just deal with a lot of people. And I have to tell you that I make a calculation when I'm dealing with somebody that uses pronouns in their bios, in their email signature. I have to just tell you this from a strategic standpoint, that as a real estate agent, right, just as a person in general, but specifically with regard to the real estate industry where you're negotiating back and forth, if I see somebody with pronouns in their bio, I'm going to push harder on them. I'm going to ask for more. I'm going to give up less. I just will. And the reason is because I perceive them to be soft. I perceive them to be somebody that can be pushed around. And if it's if my client wants a little bit more money, I'm going to ask for even more than what they want, because I perceive that agent or the other person I'm dealing with to be weak because of it. I'm just giving you sort of inside baseball on that. And because they are, they're easily manipulated. They can be pushed around. They can be convinced of ridiculous things. You know that because they have their pronouns in their bio. So they're already sort of in that cult, or they're cult adjacent, or maybe they're just doing it because they don't want to have to get into an argument with somebody about why they're bigoted for not having pronouns in their bio. But either way, it's a sign of weakness to me. It just is. And I don't have any respect for those people. I think that's at the core. So because I don't have any respect for them, I have no problem being more aggressive. Or if they want something from me, just saying, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Because because my follow-up is, what are you going to do about it? You've already shown me that you are unsure, or you feel the need to declare that you're a man. You know what I mean? Even though your name is Bob Jenkins, you know, I figured you're a man. It's not some androgynous name that could kind of go either way. You know, if your name is Bob Jenkins and you put he, him underneath it in your email signature, I'm going to grind you because I can, because my client needs me to do that, to take advantage of that. And that's an advantage that I would have. I see you as weaker. So I watch these videos, not often, you know, but you see the pronoun people that come on and they start talking about all this stuff. And I just go, you know, to me, it's an advertisement of somebody that's broken. And I wanted to really dig into that whole world and see what the numbers say. You know, I often, you know, I try to make this show as you know, fact-based as I can. Obviously, my opinion's in here. And I've got a crazy, fucked up sense of humor. We all know that. But the numbers, you know, the numbers, as Dr. Now, if you guys ever watch My 600-Pound Life, the scale doesn't lie. People do, right? The numbers don't lie. People do. So I wanted to look in the numbers. Right. And what I found was that this whole trans agenda is picking up a lot of steam, unfortunately. And this Generation Z is doomed. They're really doomed. And I have, you know, I'm a compassionate guy. I'm not a jerk. I have fun and make, you know, I go after people that deserve it. But I would never pick on somebody that was weak just because I get off on it. If it, you know, I'm concerned. I'm really concerned about this generation, because they are being misled. They are being convinced to believe absurdities. They are being convinced to question things that were settled a long time ago. Not like settled science like Fauci, but like, you know, male, female. They say, well, no, actually, all gender's a social construct. And you just go, no, you sound stupid when you say stuff like that. So I'm going to try to put my snarkiness aside for this, because this is actually going to wind up being a serious show on this. And like I said, I could have some fun and bash these people and really sort of turn it into a comedy show if I wanted. And maybe I will in another episode, but not on this one. This one is going to be the serious side of what's happening. And it's alarming. And when I get into some of these numbers, you're going to realize that we have a major problem on our hands. This is no longer just a bunch of weirdos on TikTok. It's now becoming embedded in our culture, in Western culture. And it's not accidental, and it's part of an agenda, a much larger agenda. And it has the blendings of social conditioning plus physical chemical poisoning in it. And we're going to get into all of it. So let's start with just sort of identifying the baseline numbers that we're working with here. So we have something to measure and go off of. According to Gallup, in 2012, so a little over a decade ago, 3.5% of the population was LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered. Okay. In 2022, 10 years later, 1 year ago, those numbers have exploded from 3.5% of the population to 7.2%. So they've doubled. In 10 years, the number of people that identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered has doubled. So you have to ask the question, what's causing this? Are these numbers real? Is this just identifying as T, you know, something that you maybe you're not living the lifestyle fully, but you think you are, right? You're identifying this. Also, you know, listen, we're talking about people that answer polls. You know, people that answer polls are like, you know, you let them catch you as you're coming out of the grocery store. You let them talk you into standing there for 5 minutes and getting into a discussion. Like you're probably a little bit broken just to be participating in the poll, but I digress. So, but let's start with this assumption, right? So using this number, I'm going to use the current population of the United States. That the last one I've seen is 340 million people. Okay. Might be a little bit higher after these shots, might be a little bit less. You know, where did all the people go and all, but let's just use 340 million as the baseline number. So when you take 7.2% of that number, you wind up with a figure that is 24,480,000 LGBT people. That's 7.2% of 340 million. You know what? We can round up by a half a million just to cover this and just say 25 million. So you're talking about 25 million people. This is a target demographic for a lot of the woke advertising, a lot of the social constructs that are happening right now with ESG, DEI, things like that. You know, they're targeting this crowd. They're focusing on 7.2% of the population, and in some cases, like if you're Anheuser-Busch, I would say at the detriment of the other, you know, 92.8%. Maybe that's what they want, though. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they want to be stunning and brave and they don't give a shit about their stock price, but they will learn that when you alienate 92% in order to go after 7.2%, it's a bad calculation. But anyway, we'll do that on another show. So of this 25 million, you're going to be surprised at who the biggest group is. The biggest group is actually the B's, the letter that doesn't get much play. Nobody, you know, if you've seen the Chappelle skit on it, he's like, you know, how dare, you know, you bees trying to have it both ways, and nobody likes the T's, right? They kick them out of the car in his little skit that he's doing. But the bisexual component of this 25 million person group is 57%. Okay. I was stunned to see that number. I had to go look it up. So according to this Gallup poll, and again, You're going to laugh at this. So 57% bisexual, 21% gay, 14% lesbian, 10% trans, 4% other. When you add all of these numbers up, you will find that it adds up to more than 100%. So I'm already annoyed. All right. I'm already annoyed with the poll, because the poll is supposed to add up to 100%. And here we are above 100%. So how dare you? You know, you guys, I'm trying to not turn this into a funny episode. I'm trying to be serious, but I'll be damned if you guys, clearly math was not their specialty here. I don't know. Maybe the bisexual component throws a monkey wrench in here, but you're supposed to only vote once. The trans component is, so it's 10% of the 7.2%. So what that translates to is that the trans community is 0.7%. So 7 out of every 1,000 people. As it's as low as 0.56% in some studies. So anyway, so we'll just say anywhere from 5 to 7 people
out of every 1,000. Okay. Not a lot, not a huge percentage, but a disproportionately loud voice for that, right? Especially if you're a brand, especially if you're a company that's trying to pander to this group. This is a miscalculation on your marketing point. I have a marketing degree. I look at things like this when I watch ads and I see who they're going after, I see what their brand is. I see what their product is. I see who their demographic and target market should be. And then I see them pivoting and focusing on somebody else that doesn't even buy their stuff. Like the NHL, like, we're going to really go after the gay community. It's like, does the gay community love hockey? It's like, well, no, but I mean, you know, we're going to go after them anyway. Like, that's wasting your money. That's marketing failure 101. But anyway, we're seeing this push to bend over backwards for the 0.7%, and it's just a calculation you make, you know. So let's talk about this. Let's break this down. Like, who is in this group, this LGBTQ group? Well, let's start with the baby boomers. Okay, these are the people that were born from 1946 to 1964. Probably your grandparents, or maybe your mom and dad, right? They're older now. Of that baby boomer demographic, only 2.5% of them identify as LGBTQ. Okay. Moving on next to Generation X, 1965 to 1980. This is my generation. I was born in 72. This group of the Generation X, 4.2% identify as being part of this LGBTQ group. Moving on to millennials, this is 1981 to 1996. You're starting to see these numbers start to double. And 4.2% for Gen X now doubles for millennials to 10.5% of millennials identify as being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. I'm not really even sure what the queer part means. I always thought that was just gay, but apparently there's a difference. And lastly, Generation Z, 1997 to 2012. The percentage of Generation Z that identifies as part of this group is literally double the millennials. It's 21%. 21%. That's one out of five people. If you're in a group, one out of five people in Gen Z identify as being part of this group. So this is, and like I said, millennials, it was 10.5%. It's quite literally double. So what happened? Is this something that is accidental? Is this something that's being made to happen? Like, what's the situation here? Well, there's quite a few reasons for it. We're going to get into that towards the tail end. And I assure you, it's not just social conditioning. I mean, I think that plays a role in this for sure, you know, wanting to fit in with your friends, but it's more than just that. So let's talk about some of the very real societal issues that these people have to deal with, the reality of being part of this group. And I don't want to sort of, I'm not here to pass judgment on anybody that is part of this group. I'm just here to give you the statistics on it. You know, I like numbers, and this is what I found. 30% of the LGBT members have drug and alcohol abuse issues. This is compared to between 5 and 10% for the straight community. So you're talking about anywhere from 3 times to 6 times the rate of alcohol and drug abuse. People that have decided to identify as trans, that consider themselves to identify in trans in the past 20 years, so basically since 9/11 or so, this is up 4,000%. 4,000%. That's a massive, massive increase in people that identify as trans. And listen, identifying as trans in some cases is a recipe for an early death. I'm going to I'm going to get to the suicide rates at the end of the show. You're going to want to stick around to hear them. They're nothing short of terrifying. Transgenderism was considered a mental illness by the World Health Organization up until 2019 when they changed the classification of it. They now describe trans people as gender incongruent, meaning a desire to be of a gender other than one's assigned sex. So they used to have a scientific medical definition for people that identified as transgendered, and they said, well, those people are mentally ill. I think a case can be made that a lot of them are mentally ill, but I don't know that they even had a chance. When we start to get into the chemical component of this, it's really shocking. So male to female, 2 to 4 times more likely to transition than female to male. But what's interesting about this is that female to male dominates the surgery market for this. So there are more people, there are more men becoming women than there are women becoming men. But the surgical market is stronger for women becoming men. It's going to change soon. We're going to get into some of the gender clinics statistics as well. They're alarming, as you might imagine. But just this entire sex reassignment surgery market was valued at $1.9 billion. So it's a massive industry. That was in 2021. It is expected to grow considerably over the next, by 2030, it's growing 11.23% annually, according to Grandview Research, and it is expected to be a $5 billion market by 2030. The sex reassignment surgery industry is booming, baby. It's just booming for all the wrong reasons, but these doctors see the money, these entrepreneurs see the, you know, they see dollar signs when they see these gender clinics because there's just so much money flowing into it. The ones that are leading the charge, well, the first one will be no surprise to anybody listening to this, is Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins is the worst, right? Whenever there's a false flag event simulation, you can bet your ass that Johns Hopkins is going to be involved in it. So they're a deep state hospital university system. And of course, they're driving this train, driving it right off a cliff, I might add. Mount Sinai in New York and Cedars-Sinai in Beverly Hills are deeply involved in this, as is the Boston Medical Center. These are the biggest players in the industry. There are others, but these are the biggest ones. Let's get into some statistics about what the life is like for transgendered people, like what they can expect going out into the world, into the workforce. Well, the unemployment rate for trans people is astoundingly high, okay? For white transgendered people, this is according to Human Rights Campaign Foundation, so I didn't just pull these numbers out of my ass, but the unemployment rate for white transgendered is 19%. For non-white, it's 26%. So you're talking about 1 out of every 4 non-white transgender is just out of work, right? So 1 out of 5 white transgender is out of work, just for whatever reason. Unemployable, don't want to work, can't work, have medical issues that prevent them from working, have depression that prevents them from leaving the house. You know, there's a variety of reasons. And I would say, some bigotry is involved as well, right? Someone walks in and you're just like, oh my God, like I'm in a sales, you know, I'm hiring for a sales position. You walk in, I'm not even sure if you're a man or a woman. This might be off-putting for my customers. I have to make a calculation. I don't think this is the right fit for you. So there's that. Now, is that discrimination? Maybe sort of, but it's also just a logical and realistic calculation for sales. You know, you're the outward facing contact point for my organization, for my company. It's important for me that you look right, right? I don't want somebody ratty walking in there and being my sales rep. I wouldn't tolerate that from a straight white man who walked in looking, you know, like John Fetterman. It's a clean yourself, put on some, you know, dress up, look nice, you know, look presentable for this. Goddamn, you're out there trying to sell people something. You can't look like a mess. And then someone walks in who's transgendered and you go, God, you know, like the customers might not even know how to refer to you, right? That, so there's a lot, right? This is reality. This isn't unicorns and rainbows and we're all stunning and brave and everybody deserves equal opportunity. Okay, fine. But reality is also a factor here. And the reality is, if you look like somebody that is difficult to define, and you are in a position where you are interacting with the general public and the customers and whatnot, that's something that goes in, that it's taken into account, right? It's not unreasonable for an employer, a hiring manager, a human resources person to look at someone and say, this just is going to be too much for the customers, right? So I think this plays into it. LGBTQ people are incarcerated at triple the rate of straight people. Triple. This is according to a national inmate survey in 2017. As of 2015, so not too long ago, 1 in 6 trans people were incarcerated compared to 1 in 20. For the overall population. So there's a disproportionate number of trans people winding up in prison or jail. I'm sure there's some factors. Look, I'm sure the unemployment rate plays a role in this too. You know, can't get a job because you're unemployable and maybe you have to break the law to support yourself and maybe you get caught, you know. But again, also, when we get into the mental health component of this, maybe you're just mentally ill at this point. Maybe you're on so many chemicals and they've screwed up your brain so badly that you aren't thinking clearly and you wind up doing things that get you arrested. So there's that. Transgenders are 4 times more likely to have depression. And according to the 2019 Trevor Project National Survey, 2 in 3 trans or non-binary youth report symptoms of major depressive disorder. This includes straight up depression, sleep issues, and low energy. 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3. That's a lot. Depression. I wonder why. I'm fully willing to accept the fact that some people might say, well, part of the reason why I'm depressed is because I feel like I was born in the wrong body. That must be terrifying. That must be a horrible way to feel. I really do have empathy for those people that feel like they're born in the wrong body, that have always felt that way and there's something wrong. But again, we're going to get into this. In fact, let's do it right now. Let's get into this Alex Jones was right segment. They're turning the frogs gay. Well, you know, kind of partially right. They're turning the frogs into hermaphrodites. We know that. That wasn't Alex Jones speculating. That was Alex reading the medical reports and the studies of what atrazine does. I had Dennis O'Connor on the show. He's a medical practitioner out of Brisbane, Australia. We talked about atrazine. It's a real thing. It's one of the most popular pesticides in the world, and it has devastating consequences. And we're experiencing that now. We're starting to see that. So first of all, it destroys the sex life of the frogs, right? They did this big study with frogs, and they contaminated the water in which the frogs were living in with atrazine, this poison that's made by Syngenta, agro giant like Monsanto. And speaking of Syngenta, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and the government of Norway are the 4 sponsors of the Svalbard seed vault that I've mentioned multiple times, right? Where they have all of the real seeds hidden away. Syngenta financed that with Bill Gates while making atrazine, which is an endocrine disruptor and gender-bending chemical that is having tremendously horrible effects on not just frogs, but people. 3/4 of the frogs that were exposed to atrazine became emasculated or chemically castrated. 3 out of 4 of the male frogs, I should say. 10% of the male frogs turned into females. 10%, you say? Oh, let me go back to this page. Millennials that are LGBTQ, 10.5%. Generation Z, LGBTQ, 21%. Well, in this study, 10% of the frogs just straight up turned into females, the male frogs. Now, I realize that human beings are not amphibians. I get that. But we're going to have to take a look at this and take it seriously because it's part of the problem. It's most definitely a contributing factor. Again, social conditioning is part of this as well, to be fair and to be clear, it is. But there is also a chemical agent that is at work here. There was, for the frogs that were exposed to this, 90% reduction in testosterone. Soy boy concept starting to make a little bit more sense now. 90% reduction in testosterone. I mean, just look at Antifa. Just look at those dummies. They are a billboard for 90% reduction in testosterone. All pale and weak, you know. Oh God. So when the trans, meaning the newly female, the male frogs that transitioned to becoming female frogs, when they reproduced, all of their offspring were male. All of them. So this eventually, so you take 10% of the frog population that are men, male frogs that turn into female frogs, right? And then of those, of that 10%, all the reproduction that's happening there, the offspring is all male. So if you play that out generation after generation and you let that run long enough and you don't have to, it's not long on our calendar with regard to the duration of a frog's life, but if you generation after generation of frogs, it eventually skews the population. And after a few generations, they die off because there's no more females. There's just a bunch of male frogs with no chicks around, you know? And that's a problem. And so extrapolate out where we are as human species. Obviously, our lifespan is longer and our generation's longer. And so where are we going to be in a few generations when you've got 10% of the population becoming hermaphrodites, you know, turning, you know, changing sexes and having kids that are having offspring that are only one gender? That screws things up. 80 million pounds of atrazine are applied yearly in America on corn. Oh, really? Think high fructose corn syrup. Go ahead and think about that, because that's in everything. And atrazine is sprayed on corn, and 80 million pounds of it are sprayed on American corn every year. And it's been like that for a decade, maybe longer. Atrazine is the most common pesticide contaminant of both ground and surface water in America. I mean, we know about glyphosate, Roundup, that Monsanto makes. That's what you spray on spray it on corn as well. And that creates a situation where the bugs that eat anything that has the glyphosate in it, it causes their stomachs to explode. I'm sure it's just fine for humans though. Sarcasm font. The EU has already banned it. It's already banned atrazine. It's like, oh, no, we're good. We don't need this. There are currently 6 different class action lawsuits seeking to eliminate it from the United States, but yet it is still available. You know why? Because this country is run by a bunch of lunatics, where things like that can become normalized. When the government says they care about you and they're looking out for you, just ask them, why is atrazine still available? Why? And did the Syngenta guys, do they have pictures of you guys in Congress with a bunch of goats? Or are you guys on Epstein's Island or something? What's happening here? Why is this still legal? Why are you still selling it? Why are you allowing this? Knowing what's going on here, knowing that the EU's already banned it, it's not unreasonable for America to get rid of this stuff. 2002 study showed that tadpoles swimming in atrazine, atrazine contaminated water, not just pure atrazine, became hermaphrodites. The tadpoles did. This happened during their studies. This happened at levels that they were testing at 0.1 parts per billion. Okay. The tadpole study in the water, 0.1 parts per billion. But the EPA allows 3 parts per billion for Americans. That's 30 times higher than the amount that was used in the tadpole study. And the amount that was used in the tadpole study turned the tadpoles into hermaphrodites. So when Alex Jones says they're turning the frogs gay, he gets partial credit on this one. They're turning the frogs into hermaphrodites. The frogs also developed compromised immune systems and died easily from bacteria, but I'm sure that's no surprise to anybody either, because God knows what this is doing to your immune system if it's changing you from one sex to another. And it's not just frogs, right? Fish, reptiles, mammals have all shown to be damaged by atrazine. It's a real problem, right? It's not something that a lot of people want to talk about. It's not something that most people even know, but it's very real. And of course, that's low-hanging fruit. We could just ban that stuff right away and we would see differences. But again, it's contaminating the groundwater. It's contaminating the soil, and it lasts a long, long time as well. So let's talk about the effects of hormone blockers. This is, there are ethical questions about this. There are moral questions that we need to ask ourselves about allowing 10-year-olds to be able to really consent to medical procedures that have long-term consequences. I have an 11-year-old daughter. She's pretty smart, but she can't understand the full ramifications of long-term consequences when you haven't been alive for a long term. You know, you can understand it theoretically, but from a practical standpoint of having the benefit of being older and looking back on what you believed when you were 10 and what you believe now, or what you knew when you were 10 and what you know now, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that your older self, through experience, education, and just life, has more information to make the calculation now as an older person than you did when you were 10. Your brain is not fully developed till you're 25 years old. You're a kid. You haven't gone through puberty yet. There's a lot going on. There's a lot that still has to go on. And so to expect 10-year-olds to make permanent life-changing decisions at that age, I think is asking a lot of them. I think very few, if any, 10-year-olds are emotionally capable of making that calculation. And yet it's happening. You know, you can't go buy alcohol till you're 21. You can't go buy cigarettes till you're 18. You can't join the military till you're 18. You can't go see an R-rated movie till you're, you know, whatever. All of these things. You can't drive a car till you're 16. You can transition your sex at 10. Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, fine. Whatever. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with that? So this part is the social conditioning. This part makes me insane. This part is adults normalizing this. And it makes you ask, why? Why are you doing this? What the fuck are you doing to these kids? How dare you? All you moms out there that say, my child is going to transition and they're so stunning and brave and blah, blah, blah. You virtue signaling cocksuckers out there. How dare you use your kid as a shield to deflect criticism away from you, rightful criticism about you, your insane ideas, about using your kid to get social brownie points with your friends because you're so woke and awake that you're just going to allow them to be chemically castrated and turned into something other than themselves, put them down a path where they're going to be incarcerated at 3 times the rate of other people, or commit suicide at 10 times the rate of other people, or whatever. All for you. This is about the parents as much as it is about the kid, more so than the kids. And those parents out there, that is unforgivable. You know what you're doing. This Munchausen by proxy thought process from a lot of these moms, hurting their kids in order to get sympathy for themselves. Reprehensible. But let's talk about the effects of these hormone blockers, right? Besides the moral component of it, get ready for a lifetime of dependency on hormone prescriptions and monitoring. That's what you're signing up for. This doesn't just, you don't just go to the doctor. It's not like getting a facelift. Go home and rest for 2 weeks and come back out with your new face, Greta Van Susteren did a couple of years ago. Everyone came out on CNN. Everyone's like, God damn. Did you get the full whole facelift? Did you get 2 facelifts while you're there? This is a lifelong dependence, man. You're not in and out. This is not a quick surgery. This is a lifetime of injections and monitoring and doctor's appointments and all that stuff. This can sterilize them. Hormone blockers sterilize people. Not everyone, every single time, but it is a massive side effect of this. Irrevocable changes to their body. Despite what some of the proponents of this might might say, it is not reversible. It's just not reversible. Some of them say, well, you can get on puberty blockers and go for a couple years. And then if you don't like where you are, you can stop taking it. And then everything just goes back to normal. No, 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 it does not. You're lying. When you say that, you're lying. There's absolutely no proof to that. Look, it might, you might have to convert. If you take puberty blockers at 11 years old, then what happens is you might have to convert your, these are the medical terms, quote, micropenis into a, quote, neo-vagina. And actually, stunting somebody's growth during these periods of time, during, you know, blocking their puberty and causing them to have, you know, 11-year-old junk forever, right? If you get to a point where you actually do want sexual reassignment surgery, the fact that you've stopped the growth actually is detrimental to the surgery. Makes it more difficult and causes bigger problems. That's according to the surgeons, not me. They would say, well, yeah, listen, if you start the puberty blockers, yeah, you're going to have the micropenis, and there's not much we can do with that, you know, as opposed to going through the whole process, becoming an adult, and then saying, I want to transition. Then they know what they've got to work with. It's easier for them. I mean, it's still hard, of course, but it I should say difficult. Probably shouldn't use the word hard and micropenis in the same sentence, but you get what I'm talking about. It's another side effect, no sexual desire. It's a common side effect. So you're going to have an entire life that is going to be devoid of a component that is very important for most people. So this is the reality of the situation. This is what you need to know before you go down this path. This is what parents need to know. It's what kids need to know. So I'm going to read this quote. This is, it says, you could be the most transgender-friendly service in the world, and you would still have to consider some very, very grave issues. The timing of puberty suspension, for instance, whether they can tolerate enough treatment to develop the lower part of the body so they develop physical sensations. That's Dr. Wren from Tavistock. Tavistock has entered the conversation. Don't you feel more comfortable now? Let's talk about chemical castration. It's a topic I never thought I would talk about on this show, but we're going to talk about it anyway. It's the use of drugs to lower the production of hormones in your testicles. It goes by other names, including hormone therapy. Ding, 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 ding. When you hear people talking about transgender people on hormone therapy, aka puberty blockers, just understand that in the medical world, they consider that chemical castration. There's two other names for it: androgen suppression therapy and androgen depressive therapy. But we mostly know it as hormone therapy or puberty blockers. The doctors consider it chemical castration. It's not a one-time thing either. It's not like going in and getting a vasectomy or something like that. You know, this is over a year of treatments, consistent treatments. It's they use a chemical called Lupron. Lupron is a chemical used to chemically castrate sex offenders. So when you're transitioning, you're using a drug called Lupron, which has over 10,000 adverse reactions filed with the FDA. All right, over 10,000. That's just what's been reported to the FDA. They use this to chemically castrate sex offenders, and they want to use it on your kid. Can't be that bad, right? I mean, how bad can Lupron be? What are the side effects, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked, because the side effects include thinning bones, osteoporosis, hip replacements, cracked spines, chronic pain, degenerative discs, seizures, psychiatric events, and suicide. Former FDA official called the approval of Lupron, quote, regrettable for the lack of studies. Regrettable. Since we mentioned suicides, we got to talk about this. Suicide stats for the trans and non-binary community. The suicide rate of LGBTQ youth went from in 2020, just from 2020 to 2022, we've seen a massive increase. But even if we didn't see any increase at all, it would be catastrophic. They have it at 40%. 40% in 2020. Increased to 2022, 45%. 45%. I want to talk to you about, that's for the youth. That's for kids. I want to talk to you about a group that just considered suicide. This is the just includes adults in this too, in this study. Considered suicide, trans non-binary, in the state of Texas, 56% of the trans non-binary people in Texas, 56% have considered suicide, have considered killing themselves because of what they're going through. Didn't get much better in Ohio and Georgia, 55%. If you live in Chicago or anywhere in California, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, you know, Illinois, California, Florida, Pennsylvania, 54%. These numbers aren't getting much lower. More than half of the trans non-binary people considered killing themselves. 53% in North Carolina, 52% in Michigan, 50% in New York. We have a mental health crisis on our hands. The numbers show it. Considering suicide is one thing. It's not good. Attempting suicide is something altogether, something different altogether, I would suggest. The attempted suicide rate for trans and non-binary people is between 16% and 20%. It means that one in five will actually try to kill themselves. Trans boys, the rate is 22% of attempting suicide. 22% of trans boys attempt suicide versus 6% of heterosexual, so-called, you know, normal, baseline boys. Just pansexuals, I'll be honest, I don't know what a pansexual is. 21% non-binary, 19%. You know, 19%, 21%, 22%. These are big numbers. You would expect, you know, you would hope that the rate would be like 1%. Attempting suicide is a big deal. That is a cry for help. That is a, I am hurting. I want people to know it, or I want to leave. I want to leave this planet. The whole thing is, it's sad. It's really sad. Let's talk about some of the money. Let's talk about the number of pediatric gender clinics. In 2007, want to take a guess how many there were? There were two. 2023, 15, 16 years later, from two to 250 plus. I've seen estimates as high as 350. The number I could find for certain was 250. And all you people out there that think that this is only happening in blue states, in Democratic states, well, Florida, Montana, Kansas, Wyoming, all red states, each have multiple clinics there. So yes, I would say it's disproportionately happening in blue states, blue cities in particular, but it's not limited to that. It's happening everywhere. There's a lot of money at stake. And so what are we talking about? What sort of procedures happen at pediatric gender clinics that are springing up everywhere? Well, medical transitions, the administration of puberty blockers, the administration of cross-sex hormones, double mastectomies for females, mammoplasty for males, facial surgery, and procedures on genitals. So there's a lot going on there. They offer a wide menu of services that can appeal to people that are in a process of wanting to transition. The transition industry is booming. Like I said, it's going to be a $5 billion market in the next couple of years. So I thought you might be interested to know the money, what it costs. Like, all right, how much are these people spending? Well, some of it is covered by insurance, of course. Female to male chest surgery, about $40,000. Puberty blockers are running about $1,200 every month. But again, $1,200 a month, every month forever. You know, that's rent for a lot of people. Puberty blocking implants. So without the shots, this is the equivalent. This is the implanted version. Those run anywhere from $4,500 to $18,000. If you want to transition from a male to a female, this is all in. This includes hospitals, post-doctor visits, and everything. Transitioning from a man to a woman, you're on the hook for about $140,000. Transitioning from a female to a male, a little bit less, $124,000. So not cheap. Now, about of these figures, of these $140,000, $124,000, anywhere from $70,000 to $80,000 is out-of-pocket expenses, meaning about half of it's covered by your insurance, if you have insurance. If you don't have insurance, I don't think this is even an option for most people. It's just when you get into any of these topics, one of the primary things you do is follow the money. Everybody knows that. You follow the money. When you start to see these numbers, you start to see that you're growing at an 11.23% compounded annual rate. You're already a $1.9 billion industry in 2021, and you're growing 11% every year, and it's expected to just keep going. I mean, you don't even have to have an interest in something like this. If you're a businessman and you go, I see the money, I see where this is going, I want to invest in a booming industry, I want to be early, I want to make money, I want to get, you know, I want some of this $5 billion by 2030. You see these clinics? You make them, you know, you run a pro forma on it. You make some calculations. You say, this is a great investment. I mean, provided you have checked your soul at the door, no longer need that. It's a great investment. I could never love money enough to want to invest in something like this. Incompatible with the way I see the world. To try and make money off of something like this. When you see suicide rates this high, when you know that 56% of the people in Texas that are trans and non-binary are considering killing themselves, and that one out of five actually attempt it, and you're part of this industry, how dare you? How do you sleep? It's disgusting. We'll wrap it up with this. This will set everybody's mind at ease. Quote, gender-affirming care for transgender youth is essential and can be life-saving. Who said that? Oh, none other than our favorite U.S. Health and Human Services, Dr. Rachel Levine. You know him, the man masquerading as a woman. Life-saving, you say? Yeah, I think I'll try something else. Hey, if you like this episode or you think it might be important to somebody that you know out there that's considering this or has kids in this age range, take the additional step right now of sharing it with everybody. You can find me on Twitter at macroaggressions, or you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.